Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Don't Quote Me. I'm your host, Orla Condon, and this week I'm joined by podcasters Keane Sullivan and James O'Hagan of Sissy That Pod and Queer Classified. The pair have been longtime friends of My Pod on Paper, joining us each summer to discuss the latest Villa goings-on, but also act as commentators on pop culture and often how it intersects with queer culture. Coming up on today's show, Luca Bish and Gemma Owen become the first Love Island finalists of 2022 to announce their split. Harry Styles and Olivia Wilde are also rumoured to have ended their two-year relationship. Joe Lycett puts his money where his mouth is as he gives David Beckham an ultimatum over his involvement in the 2022 World Cup in Qatar. And Elizabeth Holmes, the founder of Theranos, is sentenced to 11 years in prison. In other news, we're discussing why The Crown hasn't earned its place on Our Loves of the Week, while Keane shares his thoughts on the Selena Gomez documentary, and James is discussing the mediocre TV show that might be worth a free trial on Paramount Plus. Might. Lots to discuss. Let's get stuck in. All right, guys. This week on the podcast, we have two people who will be very familiar to many podcast fans, but also My Pod on Paper fans, because they come on and join us for chats every year. It's Keane and James from Sissy That Pod. I love to have chats with you guys. Welcome to Don't Quote Me.
Oh, thank you so much for having us. Excited to get stuck into all the news for this week.
Yeah, it was a real mixed bag of celebrity news this week. Like, it was coming at us from all corners. Quite a few breakups. We'll get into those. But it's a busy time of year for you guys, right? Like RuPaul's Drag Race is busy right now. Are we near is next week the final?
Yeah, UK season 4 ends on Thursday. Canada versus the world has just started. But I would say normally the start of the year actually ends up being busier, because I'd say like once those balloons fall on New Year's Day, it'll be season 15. You'll be talking about
guys, you
know, All Stars 8. It'll be,
it's mad, isn't it?
Like, yeah, it's insane.
It's always on. It's kind of like a soap now. It's just always on. Like,
yeah, well, actually, I got a chance to interview the executive producer of Drag Race there. So our episode's coming out on Monday.
And, oh, amazing.
And I did say to him, I was like, you know, your legacy now means every week I've got some Drag Race critique in my head. You know,
yeah.
It's legacy. It is literally a 365 show.
Yeah. It's huge, right? And like, it's obviously globalized out into other franchises and all. Mm-hmm. And like, for you guys as podcasters, like, because I just think of Love Island and everyone kind of saying like, oh my God, it's hectic for how do you do it? And I'm like, it's 8 weeks, you blast through it. Everyone's on the same. This is a slower, you kind of have to maintain a pace with this that we don't really have to worry about so much at Love Island because we know that we're going to be done in 2 months. Like, yeah. Does it ever feel like it's too much, or are you just happy to consume anything and everything that comes your way?
Well, as announced earlier in the season, I'm actually departing the 50 That Pod train at the end of January.
Exclusive somewhat.
Exclusive. Partly because of that, and there's other stuff that I want to do. And I suppose the problem is when, you know, like all our lives, we only have like a certain amount of time and space in it. And as much as I kind of really love RuPaul and being able to do that, it does have that like weekly consistent take up of the time. So eventually you do have to step back and go, right, well, can I keep giving the time over to this? Because you get so sucked into some of the seasons, but then some of the seasons you just aren't vibing with at all. I mean, it's the same, I'm sure, for yourself, with absolutely the same in Love Island. Like, you get a season like last year where you're kind of bed into it, and then you get one like the year before where you're just like, I hear
it's a slog.
So like,
and also a lot of our time we spent doing it was during COVID, where you had different amounts of time that you could give towards it. So like this year we basically both kind of have been adjusting how we cover everything, and we're going forward, there'll probably be a change to how many seasons we cover week to week and how many we're just going to cover after they're done.
I used to see creatives post about projects, like leaving projects or ending projects. And I used to think it was like so cringe the way they'd be like, oh, I've just fallen out of love with it. I used to think it was so embarrassing. I'd be like, who do you think you are? But I totally get that. And I definitely feel that as Love Island approaches. It's that feeling of like you said, James, if it doesn't deliver, we have to be there still for the whole thing.
Yeah,
and it's a huge commitment. And if you're not loving it, it's hard to have those conversations every single day and like be energized and excited. And so ever since launching my pod and pay, I feel like that cringy, embarrassing statement, I'm like, I totally get what you mean by just like,
no,
if
completely.
Your heart is not in it, it's really hard work. It's the best crack, but like,
absolutely. And I think at the end of the day, like when you are, I mean, this is like probably possibly like massive levels of notions or whatever, but like when you're making like a podcast that is going out that people are consuming and they're giving their time to listen to it, you want to try and be as upbeat and fun and like not kind of be 100%. Like, you know, massive depression, like being just like sort of fed directly into people's ears. And there's some of the seasons over the last like 2 years has been some real downers, and we've got feedback. I certainly have had feedback about like my attitude towards the show appearing to be a bit more kind of disconnected in places, and it has been. And looking at that, I was like, you know what, actually, like, I don't want to run this into the ground for me. I want to sort of be able to say, right, and you know, I also kind of am like, outside of 50 That Pod, I am very involved in LGBTQ activism. I'm working with LGBT Ireland and doing a lot more work in sort of areas relating to particularly older members of our community. So I really want to focus my time and energy into that now and try and see where, I suppose, what more I can do if I have that more time to give over. But I will miss like the buzz of 50 That Pod.
Oh, I'm gutted.
I was interested, because I'm well aware this is probably a very niche topic because most people who listen to you don't make podcasts. But like, I was interested to know, do you get like grief when you say today was a shit episode on Love Island? Because I'm sure there's someone out there who might have enjoyed it.
Sometimes, like, I wouldn't say I get grief for that. Sometimes I get people being like, I really enjoyed tonight. Like, I'm really surprised you didn't. So like, not in an aggressive way, but just like, oh, I actually thought that bit was really funny, or I really like this. And like, I think when you're note taking through every episode and you see that like, you're not writing stuff down, I then get into record and I'm like, fuck, like the notes are short tonight because there was just nothing that was like grabbing me to pop down. So I don't think I get grief for that kind of stuff. I get grief about plenty of other shit, but not that stuff. I think there is a general understanding from fans as well that like, not every night is going to be brilliant. Not every season is going to be brilliant. And I think that was what we saw when people started finding us over the last couple of years from the Morning After podcast from ITV. That was like the common thread that everyone would say when they'd be like, oh, I've just started listening to my pod on paper and I love it so much more than the Morning After because you call out X, Y, and Z. And like, look, there's always room for improvement. I'm not saying my pod on paper is perfect, but it was it was one of the reasons I wanted to start it, was because the Morning After was just so softball. And like, even if there was a shit episode, they didn't, and in fairness, they couldn't call it out. So I think there's a general understanding from fans that like, not every, but then you definitely have that responsibility to try and make the podcast at least worth it, you know?
Yeah, like, exactly. I listened to things before that I've really enjoyed and people are like, no, I hated it. And it just kills your buzz, like whether it's like a movie review or something. So I also get it from their point of view, but like, you have to be true to your own opinion.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, 100%. The other thing as well is like, it's so completely subjective. We're going to be chatting about like, say, Luca and Gemma later on. And it's like, obviously there is an enormous number of people for whom they were like the couple of last season. But I would argue that everyone present in this call here, even those hiding in the background, would agree that they were not the couple
sure
that we would have wanted.
Have fallen off Orla's radar as well, because you were so angry.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think people who have you know, ended their relationship with My Bottom Paper has probably been because we just don't agree, and that's fine. And I personally love when people disagree with me on the podcast. Like, I love having guests on who are like, oh my god, I fucking love Luca, and I'm like, what? Like, let's get into it. Like, I love that, but I definitely think that's the part I find tricky about, and we're really getting into the podcast stuff, but that's the part I find tricky specifically about My Bottom Paper is when someone really doesn't like somebody or really does like somebody and I have the opposite opinion, and then there can be a bit of grief for that, of like, how could you say this, and how, and it gets a bit aggressive, and I don't want to be that person who's like, start your own podcast, do you know what I mean, like, as in like, I'm just a fucking arsehole who got the notion.
Because I don't want the competition.
I don't want the competition. Please. No, but like, I'm just an asshole who got the notion to grab a mic and hit record and put it up. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's no one giving me permission or telling me to do it. I just do it. I'm not working for like a network. I don't have any. I can just say whatever the fuck I want, which I'm sure some people love and some people hate. Mm. But like, so that's where I find it sticky, because it's like, that's what podcasting is, and that's why it can be great and it can also be not so great, but that it's, there's space for everyone to have a chat about everything.
Like, you're like the one who grabbed the mic. Like, we're the ones who decided we're going to create this platform and do this thing. So if it was frustrating to me at one point, like last year, I think it was, and this should be the last thing before we actually move into talk about stuff, but we got like quite a lot of grief because we were, there was someone who was tagging us into posts about the fact that kind of there was particular editions of Drag Race that weren't being covered as like fulsomely as like the American or the UK one, in particular, like Drag Race Italia was kind of being like that. And like, it was kind of like, dude, we're giving up our free time to do this. Like, we're not like a national broadcaster. We aren't the BBC. We're not the NHS, whatever.
Briggs, we actually had covered it. We just did it in our premium feed.
You cheap Briggs. Pay for it.
You wanted that motherfucking pay for it.
Yeah.
So. But anyway, you can't please everyone.
You can't please everyone. And I don't know if you guys are like this, but I definitely feel that pressure to try and please everyone, which is just a messy thing to get into, because like that, you're just never, it's never going to happen. Do you know when people go on Love Island and they're like, you just got to be who you are and see how, like, that's kind of it as well. You kind of just have to do what you want.
You do need to unearth that the audio between you and Emma McLeisett about the great Curtis debate. We need to hear that.
This whole, every time I remember that she had a fucking crush on Curtis Pritchard, I need to like, I need to lie down.
When that new Aisling book is coming out, you need to unearth that bad boy. Get it out in the air.
TikTok takedown. I mean,
oh my god, and Emer, if you're listening to this, you know I adore you, but what were you thinking? She really loved Curtis, like loved him.
You could do a really shady edit as well with when she's like, I just think he's like really great, and then you like cut it into his like scene in Hollyoaks
cameo.
Oh my god,
like a political hit, like a hit campaign, like those ads, like, your beloved author previously said this about this man. Like, truly shudders. And before we get into the news of the day, I just want to preface for everyone who doesn't know this, which is everyone who's not on the Zoom call, I'm very, very hungover. It is not the ideal state of mind to be recording a podcast, but we've got two guests today, so hopefully that'll
less talking for you.
That's just going to help the momentum, I think. But I am excited about these stories, and I know that you guys wanted to talk about a couple in particular. We're going to start off with Love Island breaking news. Luca and Gemma have split. Insert gasp here if you're surprised. Why? So this broke a couple of days ago by Instagram story. Gemma put up a statement on her Instagram out of the blue, I believe on Wednesday or Thursday, saying to all my followers, I wanted to let you know that Luca and I are no longer in a relationship. It wasn't an easy decision, but ultimately this is what is best for both of us right now. Many of you have been on this journey with us from the very beginning. I want to thank you for your continued support as we start new chapters. Love always, Jem. Now, this is what are we? 3 months? Sorry.
3 months post. Yeah, it was
3 to 4, August. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. August end. Like, we're like, okay. I mean, Grant. Luca then responded a couple of hours later. This was blowing up. Nobody was like shocked. Like, it wasn't, I don't think it was like big news until Luca responded. And then I was like, oh, this is interesting. He put up on Instagram story as well in a slightly different font. Switched my phone back on after taking some time out to clear my head after an emotional afternoon to thousands of messages and news articles about my breakup. I would have liked some time to process this privately, but as you'll already know, sadly, Gemma and I made the mutual decision earlier today to go out. Earlier today, sorry. Every time I read it, I'm like,
I know.
Today, to go our separate ways. We have been on such a journey together and have made some amazing memories in the 5 months that we've known each other that we'll treasure always. I can't thank everyone enough for all their support for us as a couple and blah, blah, after the band, whatever.
Grant. It was very, tell me you've been dumped without telling me you're dumped. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I heard mutual and I was like, you know, no,
and he was
bullshit.
Like, we'll remain good friends and I wish her the best. Like, pal, she wants nothing to do with you. She wants also, nothing to do with you.
The most savage burn of it all was like literally like 20 minutes after Gemma had posted that, like, Pretty Little Things put up, like, yeah, let's hear it for our queen starting a new chapter.
No, I don't want to make any personal attacks, right? Because I'm aware that there's like a social media manager who runs those accounts, but like, what are you thinking? What, yeah. Like, wait, like when you're like brand tone voice, brand positioning, what do we want to say about this? This is what we've just done. Like, fuck.
Yeah, we're excited to be on this new show. But also, I mean, like, I don't know, I spent the last kind of weekend catching up and watching The Crown season 5, which, if you haven't watched, is so boring.
So disappointing. Don't go near it.
Oh, it really is. But it's got me in that kind of like the firm kind of mindset. Yes. And so I've been looking at this and it really is like the Owen clan came together and were like, he's never getting through the door. Like, yeah. he was like hung out to dry at that ITV Palooza thing about like 2 or 3 days ago, like 2 or 3 days before they broke up. And he's all like, oh yeah. Well, they're like, oh, it's going to be our first Christmas together. So it'll just depend which family wins the bid to have us. And he's like, oh, she's an amazing girl. Can't wait to go. Visit her. And then he's like, oh, you know, we're doing a long distance thing. Like, he's in London and she's in Chester, which is what I don't know, like not that far away.
Not a
clear. She was in North Wales and he was in Brighton.
Well, anyway, not sort of long distance by the sort of long distance, as far as long distance needs to be. And he's like, oh, you know, we don't get to see each other all the time, so they're going to go down and visit her now for a few days. And then literally,
come here.
And like, there was a photograph taken on when they were on holidays with the Owen clan, where he was like cropped out by Michael Owen as well.
Oh, he's savage.
I know. It is like, he was like, I mean, he was never making it.
No.
To the Owen
As soon as Gemma walked the red carpet at the end of the A's arm in arm with her dad, I was like, they're dushed. They're done. Yes. Like, there is fucking no way. Like, the NTAs for Love Islanders is kind of the big step out party moment for them. It's not attached to ITV. It's not one of the ITV products. It's kind of its own thing. It's one of the big nights in TV in the UK. So it really is like a showcase point for them to show like what their red carpet glam looks like and them as a couple on the red carpet. The fact that she went with her dad.
Yes.
Like,
no, I know.
Right, if we think the Owens don't like him, if we think that she was never that into him or whatever, why is it 3.5 months? Why didn't it happen straight away? Are we saying contracts? Are we like, what do you think?
I think that coming out of Love Island, Luca was like enemy number one. Like, Jack's hate train had kind of calmed down because he had been gone for a few weeks. Yeah. Luca really came out and he was the bad guy. And I think if they had split then, I think Gemma wouldn't have been able to avoid talking about his behavior and what she thought of the behavior. And then her mother and her dad would probably be asked about his behavior. And was that the reason? And did you condone it? I think it would have been really, would have been really tied up in that potentially. And maybe they were like, we just don't want to get into that kind of conversation. Yeah. We don't want it to be dramatic. We want it to fizzle out. Like, from the minute his like storyline starts to change and people start to kind of go against him, there I have no doubt in my mind that like her mom and family and whoever else were at home being like, okay, well, like, what's the plan? Because it looks like she's going to come out of here with him as a couple. Like, how do we, what do we want the next few months to look like? And what, like, do we get through the PLT deal launches? Do we kind of drain whatever few like drops we can get from them as a couple being interesting and couple interviews and all that stuff? I just think like now
let's
it's not
momentum for good. Yeah. And then when people, the eyes are off us, we'll break up.
That would be what I would think.
I think back to and it's a, you know, kind of my relationship with Love Island contestants in general is kind of that of the sort of, you know, estranged parent who like picks them up for the 2 weeks.
Oh, I'm exactly the same.
And then like drops them back to boarding school the minute and forget about them. Like there's a couple of them that I would like, Dami and India and Tasha and Ekansu is sort of unavoidable. But others outside of that, I'm like the rest of them completely could forget about. So I'm even trying to struggle like what were my opinions at the time around like Gemma. And actually, I think it sort of just confirms what I believed when I saw her going in, which is that she was going in for the PLT deal. She was going in just for herself.
Oh, and, it was a business move, 100%. Yeah.
Absolutely. And it's kind of like, you know, fair play to her. He, you know, she sort of looked out and that he was sort of like a figure who didn't do himself any favors. So like she can sort of leave him in the dust and no one's going to be asking her any questions why you're feeling like, oh, why did you string him along or whatever? Because there's enough valid reasons why you would think like this is not a good match. And I don't know, if you see him interview, he's just so stupid.
Yeah, I just think he was not the cardboard cutout that they wanted her to be with. He was not the solid kind of male to be on her arm that would kind of boost her presence and boost her brand. And it feels clear in their statements, because what I had read from sources was that they had aligned on statements and they had kind of come up with some kind of similar messaging. Sources close to her are now saying that Luca was in no way blindsided, that they've been on the rocks for quite a few weeks and they'd almost split up a few times previously. Mm-hmm. And that they tried to go to Dubai to see if that would help things. I don't know.
Bye. Going to rehab, is it?
Yeah. Like, no, he's in the city too.
Yeah. And then like his sources close to him are claiming that he is feeling really angry because, you know, he took a lot of shit in the villa and really was the enemy. And now he feels like he's just been dropped by her or something. And I'm like,
of course he's good. Like we've seen how he behaved in the villa. Of course he's quick to anger. Like that was his thing. And I when I heard they were doing long distance, I was like, God, I'd say that was tough because I'd say he was monitoring everything. I'd say he was looking on those Instagram stories. He was like, who are you hanging out with? Blah, blah, blah. So I could see that's definitely kind of what would have driven the wedge. And what I kind of felt bad by is now that obviously these people aren't on our screens all the time, I felt there was no vessel for Ekansu and Davide or Tasha and Andrew or Dami and India to like be able to be seen as triumphant. That like, I feel like a lot of those couples were overlooked for Gemma and Luca, and there's no vessel for them to have their redemption.
I don't know. I just think you need to take a quick spin through Dami and India's Iceland trip, and you're just like, here is perfect people making perfect content.
Yes. And there is so much to read into about their Instagram and like social presence. Like if you go on, and maybe it's changed now since the split, like maybe things have been archived or removed, but if you go on Gemma's Instagram, and this was all the way through Love Island as well from her social handlers and from Luca's social handlers, Gemma was about Gemma. Her profile was about her when she was in the villa. And ever since, I think there's been about maybe 3 posts with Luca as the lead post on the grid. Like she's not featured him like heavily on her Instagram by any means. It's been about her and it's been about her deals and her brands and her whatever. His social media team while he was in Love Island was all about them as a couple, them as a couple, them as a couple, them as a couple constantly. And since then, we've seen a lot more posts about, you know, with the two of them together on his Instagram. And I think that tells you what that power dynamic was like and what they thought the visuals of them as a couple meant for on either side. Like for him, it was seen as a strength to be with Gemma. For Gemma, I am reading that they thought it was a weakness for her to be with Luca. And like Dami and India, for example, or Tasha and Andrew, I think Ekansu and Davide, that announcement is on its way in the next kind of, I would say in the next few months. But I think Andrew and Tasha and Dami and India are a great example of like a, what seemed to be a real couple, and like posting about each other in a way that seems real, like watching them interact on TikTok or watching them interact on Twitter or wherever it might be. It just feels like a real couple.
No, and it's, and I mean, I think, like, you know, kind of success doesn't need to be defined by a relationship kind of like ending in you know, kind of like dying together 8 years later. So you look at like a couple who've come out of Love Island, like say Chloe and Toby, who did seem to genuinely be really in love and really strong together for a long time. And then, you know, appear to have broken up now. And it's like, you get that sense of authenticity off them or off, you know, Tasha and Andrew and Dami in India that you just never really got off. Ekansu and Davide, I just can't really figure out what's up with them. Like, are they even real human beings? But certainly with Gemma and Luca, like the whole over the top thing where he kind of like said, like, oh, I'm going to ask you to be my girlfriend, with the like slow-mo pan in of like drones over rose petals.
How much regret has he got about that? Oh my God. That was only like 2 months ago. Like, all the floating balloons. Oh, fucking hell.
Actually, Orla, I had a question for you. Who are your three favorite Love Island couples that are still together?
Camilla and Jamie, 100%. And I think they are the natural like argument to everyone who's like, they're only going on for fame. I'm like, but Camilla and Jamie found love and they have kids and they're puking together. I know most people will say Olivia, and I can't think of his name.
I think it's Alex Bowen, isn't
Alex,
it?
Sorry. From season two. But I didn't have the investment in that series. I went back and watched it kind of like years later. So I didn't, I don't have that same attachment. But I know a lot of people will say them. But for me, I mean, who is still together?
Are Paige and Finn
Faye
still together?
Faye and Teddy.
Oh, yeah. Are they still together?
Guys, they are still together. And I feel somewhat vindicated, actually.
Yeah. Good for them.
Good for them. Good for them. They're cute. And then who else? Like, I do love Dami and India and Tasha and Andrew. I think they're really good couples. Mm. I think it's still early days for us to be like, oh, brilliant, they're still together. Like, they only got together a couple months ago. But I have hope that at least one of those couples will still be together by next summer. Okay. Yeah. I think. What about you guys? Is there anyone?
Tasha and Andrew, I have more love for, I think.
Are
Paige and Finn still together?
Yeah. Oh, I don't care.
Winter
Love Island too. Like,
your man Finn is very, 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 very attractive. And that's about the end of it.
And Paige will just like, she never gave me a moment better than Lewis Capaldi. she never gave me a better moment than that. So I was like, Grant, like, I'm happy for you. I'm happy for you. And look, it ups the odds and stuff, and we can point to them as like, see,
I'm in South Africa in January.
I believe so. Lads, the fact that it's like 2 months away makes me ill. Like, it's so soon. It's so soon. Yeah,
I know. And I mean, at least the beginning of the year tends to be a quieter time, you know, for socializing.
I think it's make or break for it this year, though. Like, I think Winter Love Island, the first season, had so much to deal with that I think it was doomed from the beginning. But I think this time around, they either throw everything at it to make it work, or they cannot put us through like another 8 weeks.
It is, though. Like, I mean, it comes to, like, it's the same with any reality TV show, whether it's Love Island, Love is Blind, RuPaul's Drag Race. It comes down to the cast and getting the right cast in there from the very beginning, and then not over meddling or over producing. That's what makes magic. And, you know, you can kind of tell, like, when you're watching as much reality TV as we do, you can kind of tell opening night, like, this is going to sink or swim.
Also, Maya Jama might change things up, because Laura has been quite stilted. And I think the fact that Maya Jama has been like a Caroline Flack, almost kind of a girl who's been dating a lot. You know, she went out with Stormzy. Yeah.
Guys, they could be back together. And is it bad that I'm so happy about that? I think them as a couple.
I think she'll be able to bring a lot more to it than Laura might have been able to.
I think they have an opportunity now to really tweak things and like really give it a fresh kind of look. But like, let's see, they kind of have shown us that they're a little bit reluctant to do that, because it's such a cash cow. Like, why fix something that's not broken and all that? But we shall see.
Here's one last quick question. If you were Gemma's management team and you were going to be saying, right, we need to push her into a new show, man, so we can't let the girl pick for herself, because the last one was Luca and before that was Jocks,
Pete Davidson,
who would you
every day of the week,
of
Pete
course
Davidson.
naturally
case closed. I just think she need it. It depends on where she wants to position herself, and it seems that she wants to position herself as Queen Basic, which I don't mean in like a hateful way because there's a huge audience for that. But that's where I think she wants to position mm-hmm. herself. So it wouldn't surprise me if she started dating like a footballer or yeah. someone in sport and having that kind of, you know, that kind of wholesome, you know, glamour girl with her sporting hubs. Like, that wouldn't surprise me if mm-hmm. I were her. I would probably, or if I was her management or PR or whatever, I would try and see what spaces she could monetize. And is there people that could get her closer to those audiences? So like, you know, oh geez, I don't know. Like
Ronan Keating's son.
Like Ronan Keating's son.
I can't even remember his name.
The love story that really puts in.
Gemma Owen ushering in this new era of wags. Like, yeah. like that could definitely happen if they got yeah. her with, like, I don't know what age Marcus Rashford is. I don't know many footballers. I know he's current. Like, yeah. they got him on like current. This hot new football guy.
Maybe James,
you know,
knows because he's wearing a sporting shirt. I know. There.
Well, as an expert of the sporting, like, I can think of many a hot young football dude that they could. I mean, I've heard that David Beckham is pretty fly.
yeah. But also, like, I think one of her strongest assets, and I've been surprised that they've not used it to bolster her brand, is the fact that she's, like, a really well-respected dressage rider. Like, she's a really, like, qualified sportswoman in her own right. Mm-hmm. And it's weird to me that they haven't monetized on that a little bit more.
Yeah.
So maybe something in, like, that space. I could also see her, like, getting with, like, some guy who's like third cousin to the Duke of somewhere.
A royal. I was literally like, thinking a royal. Yeah.
But like a kind of a nobody, but like this is how they're connected to Charles. Do you know what I mean? Like it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and then there's Charles. Like,
okay, so we're saying either Victoria Beckham or Diana.
Yeah.
One yeah. or the other. The two queens.
Yeah. like a Spencer Matthews type link to the royal. Mm-hmm, like that kind mm-hmm. of, you know, mm-hmm. that's right. Yeah. We shall see. I think she'll disappoint, but I'd be like, oh, of course you might win. Maybe she'll also get back with Jax, like we've seen with Paige.
Oh, polyamory. Paige, Jax and Gemma back together again.
They're not the only split that have been reported on this week. Harry Styles and Olivia Wilde are no more.
Taking a break,
which when in the history of the phrase taking a break has it ever been a break? They are taking a break, as you said, from their relationship after nearly 2 years together. A source close to the couple said Harry's still touring and is now going abroad, and Olivia is focusing on her kids and her work in LA, and it's just not a good time for them. Obviously they met on the set of Don't Worry Darling like just over 2 years ago. Their relationship has pretty much been the main story to come out of that movie the whole time, and it's overshadowed much of the promo and the press as we feasted over in recent months. And obviously Olivia also is going through somewhat of a public split from Jason mm-hmm. Statham and getting custody of her kids and what that looks like. So yeah, like, did we see this coming? Yeah.
I did.
Yeah, I
it just was
ever,
messy, right? Like it just felt like all the fun was taken out of it.
I don't know if I ever really even bought them as a couple. Like,
yeah.
Like when the primary function of the couple seems to be to promote a movie, I just think that's incredibly suspicious. Like, I guess the reason why I probably do buy it was because it seemed genuine at the start and they were talking about some movie and blah, blah, blah. But over the last few months, like I could imagine they may have broken up before and they've just dragged it out for this movie because like it was like, I can't remember a press cycle like it in ages.
Insane.
It
was bonkers. Insane. And did so much damage to both of their like public
Absolutely.
Profiles, I feel. Yeah. Like everyone else, like Florence Pugh, it didn't seem to interrupt kind of her performance or the reviews of her performance or anything. But I mean, Harry and Olivia could not escape the drama. It was
I just to focus in on Harry for a moment, like he's a cute, twinky guy. He seems to be, you know, well, he seems to be a good musician, all the rest of it. But like he has like a track record with women the same as kind of Pete Davidson. It's like Caroline Flack, Nicole Scherzinger, Taylor Swift, Kendall Jenner twice, Olivia Wilde. And it's like with Pete Davidson, obviously, there's this like whole big dick energy. But I can't think of a single person who like sort of maybe personifies like perfectly average penis energy quite as much as Harry Styles. So I'm like, what is it that is drawing all of these like A-list women into that camp? I just can't figure it out.
I would have always previously thought of him as like a really, had a good personality. I thought he was funny. Like that was my perception of him. And then watching him do the press tour for Don't Worry Darling, I was just like, fuck man, you're embarrassing. Like you're like really cringe inducing. Like just, I personally thought like, and the comparison, I think I made it on the podcast previously. I just remember watching, you know, Lady Gaga do the press tour for A Star Is Born. Yeah. And, you know, you just need one person in a room of 100 and all that bollocks. But I think she really owned the fact that people were going to dismiss her talent and try and dismiss her performance because she was a singer. And I think she really owned that narrative and walked through the press tour with a huge amount of respect for this space that she felt she was given. And I think that was definitely a cultivated tone that was kind of built with her PR and management. But I thought she really, I think, won people over who probably presumed that she was going to potentially be disappointing, or she just got it because she was Lady Gaga and all that stuff. Whereas Harry went through the press tour with this kind of class clown energy. And I was like, sorry, you're up here with a group of actors who have worked and worked and worked in this industry over, you know, the last decade to a couple of decades, whatever it might be. I just didn't feel like it was the space for him to be like, oh, it's just fun being on a movie set. I was like, you need to like,
take it seriously.
You kind of need to convince me as to why you deserve to be the leading man.
Yeah, I actually think this has been quite a bad year for Harry Styles. Like, I know a lot of people would say otherwise. I personally feel Harry's House, although it's been incredibly successful, I feel like it really lacks the charm and swagger that he has that made people like him. Like, I think you could imagine any singer sing that. And then I think in terms of his acting chops, I think people are beginning to realize they're not really there.
And
I think he might be suffering from overexposure. I think people are seeing that he might not have what it takes, or, you know, maybe he hasn't put the work in to show that he deserves this overexposure. And I'm really interested to know how he's going to fare at the Grammys this year and what next year is going to look like for him. Because
I kind of want him to go away. I kind of want an Adele type hibernation from him. And like, look, it's not all on him either. I do think we've been just totally over-delivered Harry Styles content on every single platform imaginable. Yeah. And like, I know it from Journalism Pals and other people. Anything that you put, you know, Harry Styles in SEO is going to perform. Like the thirst for information and content and videos and all that stuff on him is massive. So therefore, we are getting served so much. So potentially some of it is not his own doing. But yeah, I totally think, I think there had been this narrative that, you know, he is one of the greatest gifts to music in, you know, decades. And now he's going to become an actor alongside Florence Pugh, one of the most exciting actresses at the moment. And it's all just fallen short for me. And now I know there's going to be someone who DMs me being like, he was brilliant and he tried so hard. And like, I don't doubt that he tried really hard and I don't doubt that he works really hard. But it just feels like they're trying to convince me that he's a game changer. And I just don't really feel he is.
And I do think it comes back to the gratitude thing that you were saying. And it's not that like everyone always needs to like be sort of down in their knees, like, you know, sort of praising and thanking for any opportunity they get. But I think that like when you are like, there's been so much conversation recently around like nepotism babies and these sort of like children of celebrities who have like managed to get these advances, and they're trying to shift the narrative to be like, oh no, it's more difficult for me because I have the weight on my shoulder. It's like, but the doors that are opening for you. And like, Harry's kind of like, when Harry chooses to like move over from music following like the success of One Direction into acting, and sort of automatically gets taken seriously when he may or may not have deserved to have been taken seriously, and starts getting offered these gigs that other actors would like absolutely kill to get, and then is kind of coming and doing this sort of like jokey pissing around, not really taking much of anything seriously. It's all very tongue-in-cheek, wink wink, kind of like a bad impersonation of a sort of a, I don't know, a stereotype of David Bowie kind of a thing without any of the class or intelligence. I'm like, and I do think that like, to bring it back to himself and Olivia, like I just feel like she has taken, like it has been like he has kind of been able to be this class clown, and he has come out relatively unscathed from this. But like, it feels like Olivia Wilde's entire career is just like now sort of, I, you know, It's like
I
when
don't know. People weren't talking about her before this movie. She had that movie Booksmart.
I think that's unfair. Like Booksmart was huge, and I felt like
it was.
And it was such a. I thought it was such a pivot for her career in that. It was like, I mean, she was a well-known actress, but she certainly wasn't like, you know, top tier or Oscar nominee actress. You know, that wasn't, you know, to me, she'll always be the lesbian from the OC. So like, that's my point of reference.
Or the lesbian from House. Yeah.
Or the lesbian from House. Not to overlook her other work. But Booksmart, I felt like, pushed her into this new space. And Booksmart was such an exciting, a genuinely exciting film to watch. And the kind of stuff that I can imagine you guys felt similar, that like, I wish I could watched as a 15, 16 year old, you know, looking at high school in America. And this was the story I was given, rather than all that other shit we got fucking 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And I just felt like she was building up this level of respect that she was, I don't know. And this has, to me, dented it massively. I also think her relationship with Jason Sudeikis, on the face of it, was a really lovely, like, was a really lovely celebrity.
It felt like a match.
Yeah. And it was like a nice relationship for fandom of red carpet events and all that kind of stuff, for people to like enjoy them and what would they do in the red carpet and like their cutesy little moments. And I was like, this is a nice, wholesome, you know, image that she's portraying. Her work is quite exciting and she's getting into new spaces. And then Don't Worry, Darling came, and the Harry links, and then, you know, her getting served papers on stage during a talk. And like, I just feel like it's been a rough year.
Yeah.
But I take your point. Like, I think she has lost respectability, but I think she's a household name now when she wasn't before. Like,
but I don't know. If you think back to like kind of however many millions of years ago when they were doing that Snow White and the, like that Snow White movie with Kirsten Stewart and the director whose name is getting out of my head.
And Charlize Theron, that one.
Yeah,
but so when there was like, when there was, you know, it obviously emerged at that point that the director and
Huntsman?
And the, yeah, the Huntsman, that they were having a, that they were having an affair.
Kean is just like filtering through words.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, I know.
Huntsman, like that, Apple, like Mirror.
I'm like that Matt's Lady meme at the moment, but I'm going through franchise.
And James is like, yeah, okay, yeah.
I'm telling you.
But anyway, back to my point.
Oh my God, the pictures.
But all the pictures came out about like, you know, this kind of like illicit affair and them kissing. And then like her career was super damaged, and she got like took the brunt of all of this because it was seen that she was destroying poor Robert Pattinson. Donald fucking Trump was out after her for like months and months. And like your man kind of got to like slink back into his career in a sort of, you know, whatever. And like, it's not the same situation, obviously, but it feels like as if yet again, it's the woman taking the brunt of the criticism for kind of just like expressing their, experiencing their lives as it is. I mean, and we'll never get to know what Don't Worry Darling's release would have looked like if it hadn't been for the sort of circus that was around it.
Yeah.
And whether then that would have softened people's opinions of it. Because, like, well, it's got like a 39% fresh rating on Rotten Tomatoes. So, like,
yeah, can I ask, did either of you see it?
No.
I did. Yeah, I did.
What do you think?
It was fine. Like, it was grand. Florence Pugh was amazing. Harry Styles was terrible. I mean, no, he wasn't terrible. He was so utterly mediocre. And then when he was up next to someone as impressive as far as Pugh, it was like, oh, yeah. You look so much worse now because she's so good. Like, there wasn't a match there at all. Like, I don't know how they passed chemistry reads and all that kind of stuff. Like, she just like outshone him 10
times. And the only real winner of that whole thing has been Florence Pugh.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah, it has.
And Chris Pine's dying inside face.
Oh my God, yeah. Which would have been me as well if I was like a seasoned actor who's had to like do my fair share of shitty movies, and then I finally get in like juicy roles and I'm sat next to Harry Styles being like, it's just a real movie that you'll watch in the cinema, you know, like, and he's like, I would have been like, please make it stop.
At least people are calling Chris Pine a seasoned actor now, because I don't think they were before.
Yeah, that's it.
It's the little salt and pepper in his hair, you know. It's just like, oh, he's an actor. Hi guys, just jumping in here with a little note on our next story. We recorded this episode on Sunday, and as of Monday evening, there have been some updates to add further context here. Joe Lycett took to Twitter today to confirm that he did not shred the £10,000 he claimed he had, but had actually already donated it to a list of LGBTQ+ charities, even before he had put the call out to David Beckham to cut ties with the World Cup in Qatar. This comes as many teams, including England and Wales, have reversed their decision to wear the One Love armbands during all games as a sign of solidarity with the LGBTQ+ communities. Why? Well, a joint statement from the country's associations read, FIFA has been very
very clear that it will impose sporting sanctions if our captains wear the armbands on the field of play. As national federations, we can't put our players in a position where they could face sporting sanctions, including bookings. So we have asked the captains not to wear the armbands in FIFA World Cup games. We were prepared to pay fines that would normally apply to breaches of kit regulations and had strong commitments to wearing the armband. However, we cannot put our players in a situation where they might be booked or even forced to leave the field of play. The editor-in-chief of Attitude magazine has supported and praised Joe Lycett in a statement that reads, "The fall of David Beckham's star has been fast and heavy. It's a reminder that being an advocate for not just LGBTQ plus rights, but women's rights, immigrant workers' rights, and any human rights should not be lip service. It's not a trend to boost a person's profile. Human rights are not a fashion statement to be made to generate coverage in the style pages of tomorrow's magazines. They are not a new haircut to stir up media attention. They are real issues that affect the livelihood of billions of vulnerable people around the country. Joe Lycett's prank worked to highlight the flippant attitude David Beckham has to human rights and what a price tag he had in order to turn a blind eye to the corruption that awarded Qatar the World Cup by FIFA. It all amounts to making this year's so-called beautiful game a truly ugly moment for sport." Okay, we'll move on to talk about a story that has a big update today as we record this. It is Sunday evening. So earlier today, Joe Lycett posted a video on Twitter. I think he live streamed it as well. It's on all of his social platforms. Shredding £10,000. Why, you may ask? I would ask, where have you been? He posted a statement last week with an ultimatum for quote-unquote gay icon David Beckham over his ambassadorship for Qatar and the World Cup, which is taking place there currently. He said that unless David Beckham pulled out and pulled his support for the World Cup in Qatar, that he would shred £10,000. Was there also more to that, that if David Beckham had to match the donation or something?
I think it was just like pull the gig.
That 10,000 would have went to charity had he
that
done
was
that.
It. Yeah. That was it. Yeah.
It was either going to be shredded or it was going to go to a queer charity.
That was it. It has been reported that Beckham signed a multi-£1 million deal with the FIFA World Cup hosts, which Lycett says was worth £10 million, but other reports have put it as high as £150 million. The reason that Qatar, some of the lengthy list of reasons why it's very problematic that the World Cup is taking place in Qatar is that their human rights record, their laws about same-sex couples, and the thousands of deaths of migrant workers since it's been announced that Qatar would host the World Cup. I know, James, you wanted to talk about this in particular. It's a doomed affair, and like we've spoke a lot about people's branding and positioning themselves over the last couple of stories. How was this an idea that he thought was good?
I think it shows the absolute lack of I have been getting a huge amount of joy out of watching the World Cup like absolutely disintegrate into chaos over the last while. This sort of you know, insane stories coming out about sort of the agreements about selling beer, not being allowed to sell beer, the sort of horrific numbers, like 6,500 migrant workers. I also was watching the show on Netflix, because I think it's like FIFA Undisclosed. I've only watched a couple of episodes, but it's about kind of like the corruption within FIFA, and you really see this play out. And it's that people think that they are, because they're part of football and football is seen as the great thing that unites the world, that they are above everything else, and that they always have the sort of fig leaf of, it doesn't matter what the people where we're playing the football are doing. This is about the global sort of, you know, unity of football. And it's like, that fig leaf starts to just get a bit tethered away when you are going to a country where sort of women aren't allowed to drive cars and aren't allowed to leave their houses without chaperones, where there's like massive levels of assault against like hotel workers, against and queer people aren't allowed just to exist. Like they are, I think it's not the death penalty, I think. Prison certainly, and the death penalty for
7 years prison, but it's death penalty for Muslims.
But yeah, and I just think that like for Joe Lycett, was absolutely right to target David Beckham for this, because he has been courting his queer fan base since the early 90s when he was part of the coining of the phrase metrosexuality. He started reaching out to queer audiences. And, you know, as Joe Lycett himself said in his statement, he married a Spice Girl, which is about the most homosexual thing you can do. Like, and himself and Victoria have relied on and been part of the queer community for decades now. And it just shows the thoughtlessness with which he thinks of his gay supporters, gay followers, gay fans of football, that he would then go and sign on for this. And it's a really bad mood. But the problem with it is, though, I think that because Joe Lycett has actually, you know, shredded the money, most of the coverage is going to be like, well, what could Joe Lycett have done with that £10,000?
Oh, so this is the part that frustrates me. And I saw, I think when I checked just before we came on to record, that he had deleted the tweet. I don't know. Oh, it's back actually now. So maybe he archived it for a while. And I think there was someone underneath who commented. Someone tweeted underneath his video saying, this has raised awareness for how little people still value LGBTQ lives. It's raised awareness for how people who claim to be allies can be bought, and raises awareness of how vile this whole farce of a World Cup is. That's a lot of value for 10K. And I think that's what you need to look at this is, if Joe Lycett spent 10K on advertising to advertise how much of an atrocity it is to host a World Cup in a country like Qatar, people wouldn't have questioned it. This was just a way that was way more impactful and was guaranteed to make headlines more so than any other, you know, video campaign or anything else that he could have bought and paid for. Yes, you can say, oh, what could that money have done? But what the money has done is made this the front page of every paper. It has put the pressure back on David Beckham and all of these other people who say that they support, you know, they support the LGBTQ plus communities, they support women, they support this, that, and the other. But actually, when it comes to a paycheck, they can park those so-called sports. So I think you can look at it as shredding, or you can look at it as he bought up ad space with a campaign about how much of a farce this is. And for 10K, like that girl said.
I think that as well. It's like, for the cost of 10,000 of his 10,000 pounds sterling, he has been able to create an information awareness raising campaign, the likes of which you literally for millions of pounds wouldn't be able to create. And I do think that it is like, it's so important that a lot of people who will get in front, hopefully it'll educate them a bit more on what the actual issues are. And hopefully it does get through to David Beckham and to people like that who do sort of pink wash over the course of Pride or during queer events to sort of say, look, I'm here, I'm standing with the community. That it's not okay to just kind of push the community aside and say, oh, I understand. Like, did any of you watch or read about the like insane press conference with the president of FIFA the other day, where I can't remember his name is something like President Infanatissimo, like he's a fucking Marvel villain, but like he came out and said that actually the way the West was covering this was racist against the population of Qatar, and that he, as a red-haired and freckly Italian boy growing up in Switzerland, actually understood what prejudice was. He knew what it was to be gay, what it was to be disabled, what it was to be a migrant, because he had experienced that through growing up as a red-headed child in Switzerland. And I was like, how divorced from reality do you need to be?
I don't know if you listened to the Guardian's the Guardian's daily podcast, or whatever, but they had a doctor, a Qatari doctor on who has now got residency in the US, who apparently was the first Qatari person ever to come out publicly and has put his family at danger by doing so and can't have any contact with his family and stuff. And it's a really great conversation to hear, like what it's like for queer people over there, what it's like for him being a queer Qatari, not being able, like if he gets in contact with his mom, she might be arrested. And you know, they ask him, they say, you know, some people will say that the law, the life over there is their culture, and should the culture not be, you know, respected? And he said, if your culture infringes on human life, then it's that culture. And I thought that was a really great way of phrasing it, to like to snap down anybody who's being like, you know, this is racist against Qataris, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, no.
It is interesting. And like, just to bring us into like a little queer comparative study, like I do remember back in, was it 2019 when Eurovision was in Israel, mm-hmm. like, there was so much conversations around boycotts within the queer community specifically. I know people were saying that, like, as much as they love Eurovision, as much as it's about unity, that because of the circumstances in Palestine, they wouldn't be able to. And, like, you know, lots of people have different opinions on this, but it was like a real conversation happened, and there was a real sense of like, oh, actually, I can't engage with this because yeah. of how of sort of like, you know, issues that are going on in the real world that are affecting real people's lives over there. And it's sort of a shame to see the straight community, you know, like Robbie Williams yeah. saying that, like, he wouldn't even be able to perform in his kitchen if he'd be a hypocrite not to take the gig over there. And it's like, just these people who have courted queer fan bases and pinkwashed over the last.
Sure, Shakira as well. Shakira almost did it before she backed out. And,
yeah.
You know, I love my Colombian queen Shakira, but she's had a ropey year with the tax evasion and now this. You know, at yeah. least she backed out. She gets like a 2 out of 10 points
that's
for
it.
That. But like,
that's
come
it.
On.
I saw a little while earlier as well. The BBC were not covering the opening. Ceremony, I guess you call it. Mm-hmm. Was that today or was that yesterday?
I think that was today.
They didn't show that, which normally they would for a World Cup. So there was kind of discussion about, you know, fair play to the BBC for not showing, you know, anything outside of the sport and blah blah blah. And it's like, it's a statement, but it's. Mm. Pretty fucking yeah. light. Do you know what I mean? It's just yeah. and like even Joe Lysa put up image I think yesterday. Of an email he sent to David Beckham's PR team, kind of saying, you know, so can I expect a response from David Beckham, or are we just ignoring this? Like, let me know, should I fire up the shredder? Like, what? And I think David Beckham has kept quiet on the Qatar stuff. There's been a lot of backlash all year for him, and I think he has kind of been like, you know, let's ride out the storm. Mm-hmm. I mean, anyone who thinks he queued to see the Queen as just, you know, just that. You can believe that. I think there's always ulterior there's always ulterior motives. And I think that did a huge amount to kind of, I suppose, bring back that narrative that he was just a humble teenager who wanted to play soccer. And he, you know, he just got his shot and he made it big and yeah. he loves his country and blah, blah, blah. And I think it was a distraction from, I also was talking to someone recently who was saying, was saying that, they read it or was it on a podcast that the all the drama between Victoria Beckham and Nicola Peltz and Brooklyn Beckham was all another story. And I mean, I have said this about the Kardashians time and time again, that I do believe Kris Jenner has like a little folder of goss, a little folder of stories that she can pull from if and when she needs to move the narrative and move the conversation.
That's what spin doctors do. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it would, again, that would not surprise me if the Beckhams, who are a well-oiled media machine, I mean, how they handled the Rebecca Luce stuff and came back from that was like iconic. And
I was going to say, like, this is just a bad PR day for David Beckham. And he's be like, in 3 months, people aren't going to care about this and also have my millions. Yeah.
And I think that the thing is, some people will remember and some people will. And I do think that, you know, within the queer and more liberal leaning, kind of world, we're more likely to put our money where our mouth is in supporting the people who we like in the way that sort of people on the other end of the spectrum don't tend to. So I think that, like, you're making there will be, you know, if there is like a pride endorsement or a pride campaign that comes out, David Beckham can be sure that from now on this is going to follow him and he's not going to have the easy ride that he's had up until this point.
Wasn't me saying no one's going to talk about it, but I think that's saying too.
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah, for
yeah.
sure.
And
for
I
sure.
do think it was interesting. So Mel C, who obviously is like, you know, the queen of the gays, the sort of like our national icon, was asked about it and did address it and said it had put her in an awkward situation with Victoria because she's a good friend and with David because she knows him a long time. About the fact that she couldn't possibly, you know, and if Sporty Spice is telling you that your sports deal is wrong, you need to listen.
Like,
I would like to wrap this segment up though with the question: are you actually allowed to broadcast yourself destroying money?
So I looked this up because I also thought that that was something, especially in the Queen's England. I was like, this would surely be, or the King's England as it is now.
And when inflation is an issue, taking that 10 grand out of the marketplace isn't going to help anybody.
No.
So it is illegal in the UK to deface a banknote in any way. through the Currency and Banknotes Act of 1928. But it is not illegal to destroy a banknote altogether, for example, through burning. Now, if he had done what he did in the US to a US dollar, it would have been illegal. And in other parts of the world, it would have been illegal. But destroying the banknote entirely was not illegal, but actually defacing it would have been. Feel like there's a little loophole there in the Currency Banknote Act of 1928, but I'm sure it'll close.
Okay, so it could, be legit. Like, I was wondering whether it was a
fake money or something.
Fake money, and maybe he donated it to charity behind closed doors or something like that. You know, but maybe it was legit.
I mean, maybe he'll still do a donation or something. Mm. But again, I think that person on Twitter and many others who have said it, I think you can't, if that's your issue with this whole thing, that he shredded in money, you need to pivot to the awareness that he bought with 10K, and that kind of ad space to buy, you just 10K would have been piss in the wind. Like, it just would have been pointless. Like, so you can look at it as he shredded it, or you can look at it as he invested in ad space for a really worthwhile conversation. Mm-hmm. And every news site had that as their lead story over the last couple of hours as the video went live. And I think that's, 10K well spent, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, our final story of the week. Elizabeth Holmes has finally been sentenced. Have you guys watched The Dropout? Have we?
And the podcast.
We're
all up on it. Don't worry about it.
Guys, covered. This little lady, she was once described by Forbes as the world's youngest female self-made billionaire, but her startup Theranos collapsed after a series of articles in the Wall Street Journal in 2015 questioned the technology she claimed to be revolutionary. She set up Theranos, like I said, and she promised that her company would revolutionize how patients received diagnosis by replacing traditional labs with small machines designed for use in homes, pharmacies, and even on the battlefields, and would use just a single drop of blood to diagnose dozens and dozens and dozens of conditions. Revolutionizing the healthcare system in the US and around the world was a true claim to make if her technology did what it claimed to do. The company was once valued at $9 billion. But this week she has been sentenced to more than 11 years in a US federal prison for conning investors and endangering patients. Prosecutors were also seeking $108 million in compensation from Holmes. And that amount covers most of the nearly $1 billion she raised from a list of sophisticated investors, many of whom there would be names that you'd recognize. I mean, she didn't get what the prosecutors were seeking. They were seeking, I think, 15 years. And like I said, that big payout as well. I think her legal team were asking for like a commuted sentence and community service and fines and all that kind of stuff, basically keeping her out of prison. Which, I mean, this is far closer to what the prosecutors were demanding than what she was. She has a baby on the way. She has one child who is, I think, under 1 year of age. So not ideal circumstances for her kind of health-wise. But, I mean, this is surely comeuppance for someone.
Yeah, you have to think the baby thing is a cunning device to try keep her out of jail.
Are you saying she like snipped a hole in the condom or something? Like,
well, I think there's a Machiavellian side to her having those kids, which makes it even worse. Like, like most people, if you think you might be going to jail in 2 years, you might not. And look, maybe it's because you want to have kids, but you're not going to be there to raise them. So I know it just makes me feel a bit ache when I think about the kids in the whole situation.
Yeah, there's definitely a kind of a morality issue there of, you know, what would I. Would I do that? I don't know if I would. I totally get your point. And it would be naive of her. It would have been naive of her to think that what her legal team were asking for was, you know, a likelihood or a possibility or a strong possibility. Because, I mean, all signs were that prosecutors were going to get something that they felt happy
with.
But
she's currently not in jail. And I'm not entirely sure why. Is she out on bail? And I don't know why now that she's been sentenced, she's not in jail, because they're going to appeal it. But apparently, even if she fails her appeal, she'll still have to do the same amount of time. It's not going to be built in while she waits for an appeal.
Yeah, and I know this, sometimes they do things as well, like I've seen on previous cases, like high profile cases, where it's been parents who have young kids. Sometimes if it's this close to Christmas, they'll say, you know, report for your sentencing on the far side of Christmas. Now, I'm not sure if that applies for federal prison. It feels like this should be more of a like handcuffs on, in you go, like it starts now. But yeah, I presume there's a set date for her to kind of check in.
And it's one of those, like, it is like, because the kids like thing is, listening to the podcast over the number of years like that this story was kind of going on, and like seeing like how sort of Machiavellian and how sort of, I suppose, sophisticated she was in the story she was trying to tell, how it was so clear that she is this, you know, incredibly intelligent, I might say sociopathic, who knows, kind of person. But the way she sort of suddenly flipped and tried to present it, that actually she was like this, you know, very innocent person who had been sort of taken advantage of by her business partner, and then like to sort of completely revamp her image and come back as this sort of, you know, homely, you know, woman with children, with this beautiful husband as well. Like it does feel very much like she's trying to like get our sympathies, and it worked. Like I feel very sorry for her going off to prison, but at the end of the day, when you look at what she did and what she was able to get away with, you think not only does she need to go to jail, but there needs to be like an overhaul of every single system that allowed this to happen.
They're calling it the biggest con to have ever happened in Silicon Valley. And I think exactly what you both said. I think for anyone who might be buying into kind of the sob story that her team has used in court, which you would expect them to do, that is their job to try and, you know, pivot public perception, was that definitely played a part in this court case as well, the fact that her story was so well known. I think if you're starting to feel that sympathy, and I definitely do as well, I definitely get bought into that kind of stuff. Like when I think of the fact that she's pregnant and I'm like, you're going to have a baby in the next, like, I don't know, 6 months, and then you're looking at an 11-year sentence. Like, what does that look like for you as a mother and all that stuff? But this is a woman who, you know, deliberately altered her voice and her look and all of this to present a very deliberate image and to get a very specific reaction from people and to create a brand that she thought communicated the message. Like, this is a person who has cultivated that over years. Mm-hmm. She practiced changing her voice. She, you know, she wore the turtlenecks because she believed, like, she knows what it is to use
image
those kind of tools. So like, you can't think that now, as she arrives in court with her kind of hair tumbling in curls and she's wearing kind of little, you know, pinafore dresses with cardigans and blazers, and she's holding the hand of her very attractive husband and she's putting her hand on her tummy, and you can't believe that all of that is, you know, has not been thought of. I mean, like we saw with Anna Delvey as well, which I think the two of them are kind of linked now because of The Dropout and what was the Anna Delvey one on
Inventing
Netflix?
Inventing Anna.
Inventing Anna kind of came out around the same time, and it was so I feel like those stories are kind of interlinked in my mind. But I mean, we saw it with Anna Delvey, like the outfits that she, you know, curated for her court cases and court appearances, and what that did for her brand, that she was getting, you know, fashion chops while she was on, you know, the witness stand and all this kind of stuff. I just think that, you know, seeing her as this kind of lowly, you know, mum to be who's you know, scared about her future and got conned and wanted to do the right thing for healthcare, I just think it's a bit,
but that's it. Like, I know I just accused her of being Machiavellian and getting pregnant for sympathy, but I genuinely believe
you're like, well, maybe I should
genuinely believe that she lied to investors because she genuinely believed that she was going to be able to make her dream happen, and that she just got carried away with it, and she didn't stick to it when it didn't work. She didn't knuckle down and do the work, and she kind of got carried away with this idea of being a Fortune 500 leader and inspiring women, because she did inspire so many women. And I genuinely believe her heart maybe was in a good place, but she just let the greed and the corruption and the power take her over. You know,
I kind of agree. I also have the opinion that I feel like, you know, her heart was in the right place. She wanted to do good. I think the doing good and the, you know, the benefit that this would have had was a lucky coincidence to a, you know, like changing healthcare. I think it wasn't about the result of that change, but more being the person to revolutionize healthcare, and, you know, what that would look like as a woman under 30. And Jesus, like, how I would be like, you know, that would be me in the history books for the rest of time. And I think, you know, the fact that this would have helped so many people, I think was just a nice little cherry on top of that kind of image.
Yeah, I'd agree. I'd agree with that. And I think it kind of is like, it didn't really matter what the thing that made her kind of a tycoon was. She just wanted to be a tycoon and a billionaire and to be seen in this way. Cause like, you only, like, you know, if you've listened through to the podcast, they have a couple of people on who like say got like either false or misleading results as a result of using the Theranos test. They talk to people working in the labs who sort of were throwing out or getting rid of tests or saying, oh, we, you know, that like pretending they'd lost results because they didn't want to acknowledge that the systems aren't working. And this is people's actual health. So like, you know, the impact being carried out on, and you don't like, there's obviously the stories that have been identified and the people that have been spoken to in the podcast, but you don't know how many other people got misleading or bad results from a Theranos test and then ended up like with cancer or ended up with some other sort of ailment that wasn't discovered for a longer period because they were like, oh, I got that Theranos test, I don't need another one now.
Yeah,
definitely. By the time the machines were in those Walgreens, she had gone too far. 100%.
I mean, it was. I'm curious to see when her sentence actually starts. I'm also, it's a time of sentencing. Are you guys Housewives fans?
Not especially. I got into Beverly Hills in lockdown, and then once I got my life back, I sort of. You're like,
oh, there's 27 series of RuPaul in the next month, so I'm not going to be able to dive into this one. For Housewives fans, we are waiting in, I think it's next week or next weekend. Jen Shah is waiting for her sentencing for, she's a Real Housewives of Salt Lake City housewife, and she's also being sentenced, I think, before the end of November. So we will cover that on here as well, I'm sure. Whether you want us to or not, I know I talk about Housewives pretty much every week. But yeah, we'll move on.
Is Housewives a possible pivot for Olivia Wilde?
No.
Oh, that would be a step down, I think.
Did we see?
Like,
sorry,
no offense to the Housewives franchise.
Oh no, no, I 100% agree. did we see that Heidi Klum is reportedly in talks to join Beverly Hills, which would be really interesting.
That would be like amazing. That would be the coup. That would be the coup.
Right? Like, I think she would be really, really good. It reminds me of like the Yolanda Hadid. When she came in, like, she just brought such a different energy to the group and like it was all her famous ties and it was just, she was great. So I think Heidi Klum could definitely be of the same ilk. So I'm hoping that that's real. I know there's also been reports of, Kamora-Lee Simmons, is that her name?
Kamora-Lee Simmons. Simmons' ex-wife.
Yes. She's been reported for a long time as well. Okay. And I know they're delaying filming for the next season because they are trying to see about what kind of tweaks they'll do. So we shall see if Heidi Klum of Victoria's Secret fame will make an appearance. Right, that's news that we covered. We are going to move on to stuff that we have been loving this week, stuff that has brought us joy. I am going to mention this because you brought it up earlier, James. I had hoped and had earmarked The Crown for my love of the week for this week, and it just wasn't the case. I was so disappointed with what felt like such a softball series. I don't know if they balked it given the climate that we're in, that, you know, Queen Elizabeth has obviously died in September and, you know, there's Harry's book coming and, you know, were they nervous of potentially too much backlash from hardcore royalists? I don't know. It was just soft for one of the most hectic decades and our periods of the royal family for us to get that. It was like,
I mean, they spent approximately, I think, three of the 10 episodes were focusing on the Panorama interview. They did a whole like spin-off episode on like Meet the Al-Fayeds that we didn't need.
I actually enjoyed that episode, though. I actually thought it was really interesting how he was trying to ingratiate himself in British society.
I just liked it, but I felt like we didn't get enough of the other stuff. Like, I liked that episode, but it felt like it was just an imbalance. Like, we hardly saw Imelda Staunton. Like, we hardly saw her.
Yeah.
Like,
good at the same. I actually have only watched 7 episodes, but I don't care if you spoil it because obviously it's history. But yeah.
Diana dies.
not this season.
Yeah, because actually, Princess Margaret, I was like, I think I saw an episode about Princess Margaret. I was like, oh, here she goes. But my boyfriend was like, no, she'll survive to until next season. Yeah.
I do kind of think that they kind of, if they want, they could have covered more time. Like, I think they could have done the whole, like, Diana's death and aftermath in this season. And, like, I kind of felt like...
Oh, do you think? You think they could have brought all of the 90s in?
I feel like I'm not, like, I mean, I know, like, because I just, it felt like we got an awful lot of just sort of, like, hand-wringing kind of stuff that was really unnecessary. And it was, like, this whole bit with, like, Boris Yeltsin coming over and, like, that, like, whole, like, extended, incredibly gruesome scene of them, like, murdering the Romanoffs. And it was just a bit, like, there's so much stuff that we don't need here. I think they could have, like, you know, picked up the pace a little bit, like, the episode.
Yeah.
I quite liked the episode with the divorce. I thought that was, like, nicely done, like, showing them and, like, intersplitting it with, like, other couples who've been divorced. And it was sort of, like, that was effective. But I think that they could have brought it up to, like, Diana dying and then done, like, kind of, like, almost brought it up to maybe, like, 2012 and finished there. Because because, like, in a way that would have been, a really good...
I love the rapid-fire Shakespearean death episode. Princess Margaret said, oh, the Queen Mother's dead as well. Oh, my God.
The death. Three weddings and a funeral, or three funerals and a wedding. That's my next season of it. But no, but I do think that, like, you know, it started out with the car, or like with the storylines around the coronation and kind of like the massive popularity. And I think that if you think back to 2011, 2012, when William got married and they had the Olympics, that was probably the next, like, real proper high point of where they had fully realized the popularity of the royal family again. It was that, like, moment again. Yeah. I felt like kind of finishing it there would have been interesting. But I just found, like, there was so much that I didn't care about. Like, I was on my Merge mansion the whole time.
Yeah.
Ken. I actually have the opposite opinion, because I was all excited for the Diana stuff. And so far, anyway, the next episode is the Martin Bashir episode that I'm at. I've actually found the Diana stuff less interesting because I've seen all the documentaries. I've seen the real life footage, and I don't care for this replica footage of it.
Yeah.
So I actually find Mr. Fayyad and his aggrandization with English society really interesting. I enjoyed that Russian episode. I actually find the other sort of historical bits I didn't know about more interesting, because I'm like, actually, this Diana stuff isn't giving me what I want, because I've kind of seen it on already.
But you know what I really wanted was a lot of what we saw in season four, which was, you know, Elizabeth and Charles, their relationship, and that idea that, you know, he is becoming an adult now, and he is now, like, that idea that he's going to be the next king became a lot more real because he was an adult and he was working, you know, harder as a you know, active member of the royal family, and their relationship of, you know, how does Elizabeth be his boss and his mentor, but also his mother, but also his PR agent, but also his all this stuff.
Yeah.
And then also navigating through his relationship with Diana and his marriage and what that looks like, and the difficulties that relationship kind of brought to Elizabeth's door and her relationship with her son. And I actually really wanted to see more of the Elizabeth Charles fallout through the breakdown of Charles and Diana's relationship, you know, how he handled it, the interview he gave where he admitted to having the affair. We didn't even see her have a conversation. Like, it just felt like we missed a lot of that internal politics that we got in seasons past. But do we think that's because we as an audience are so much more aware of this decade and this season that they were we can't really fluff it out with conversations this time because everyone kind of knows.
I don't know. I suppose
it hasn't stopped them before, but
But I think that there was just a case of they maybe had like they put stuff in there that didn't really seem necessary. Like that whole episode where, you know, Prince Philip had like a friend who was riding carriages.
That was boring.
And the whole bit of it was like, oh, will the Queen realize that actually her family were responsible for the killing of the Romanovs? Because I enjoyed it, but I was like, give me more of that, explain more of it, or have it be something that feels like emotionally compelling rather than get to the end and the Queen's like, yes, I already knew, actually. Yeah. It's like, okay, cool. And I was like, who is this woman and why is she coming to Sandringham? Why have we introduced her? Prince Philip is the most boring character in this entire thing. We don't need any of him. Like it would be more interesting. Like, also, like, show me more of Andrew.
Yeah.
Show me more of Andrew, you know?
I don't like the Andrew stuff. I feel it's just pandering to the headlines. And I think, like, had this been made without the Andrew headlines, we wouldn't have seen Andrew. Whenever I see him, I'm there. I'm like, we're only seeing him because he's a pedo.
Well, I do think the one time he was brought up was the toe sucking, right? Like, that was kind of the one moment. And that, I mean, that was at the time really big.
And that made sense.
So kind of, but I know what you're saying. It's kind of this nudge at, like, there's Andrew, guys. Like, you know, there is that kind of, for sure. But I don't know, I just felt like it just fell short. I feel like I didn't get, you know,
I feel like, sorry to
go on,
I feel like if they hadn't had to deal with the Epstein stuff and Andrew wasn't known as a paedophile, this season could have been more interesting in that it would have been able to feature more the dynamic between the royal couples. So it would have been able to let the Queen and the and Prince Philip move on into like a bit more of a supporting role, and you would have had like Fergie and Andrew and the other people, like those sort of other younger people and their children a bit more. Because I think that's the problem, is that like you're so limited on the characters you're seeing, and then a lot of them are kind of true. Like Margaret has done nothing, but she just sort of sits there being a sad reminder of the amazing Vanessa Kirby in season 1 and 2.
Do you know what I thought? The actress who played Princess Anne looked like an older Vanessa Kirby. Like I thought they actually looked really similar. So which every time she came on, I was just like, oh, that's Princess Margaret. And I was like, no, that's Princess Anne. You know, and I had to do the like, the woman with mats again. I'm like, who's related to you?
We haven't even seen like Eugenie or anything on it before. No. And like, I think there's a good point there to say that like, having filled in the gaps of what we already know is kind of what the show can do, nothing else can do. But they're just deciding to give us the stuff that we've already seen. And I think it's ultimately disappointing.
Yeah. Okay. What have you guys been loving this week? What has been winners for you? TV, lifestyle, food, anything at all that's brought you joy?
I wouldn't say this brought me joy, but I really enjoyed the latest Selena Gomez documentary, My Mind.
Okay.
It's on Apple TV. Have you seen it?
I've not seen it.
Okay. So
I've seen clips on TikTok.
Okay.
Which is the same thing, right? No, go on. Tell me, is it worth it?
I would say it's very good for what it's trying to be. If you want a tell-all...
Now there's a spin.
Yeah. If you want a tell-all documentary on Selena Gomez and her relationship with Justin Bieber and her relationship with The Weeknd and the
oh my God, her relationship
kidney
with
transplant.
The Weeknd.
Yeah. Marshmallow. Yeah. You're not going to get it. Basically, this is... It documents her life as a reluctant pop star as she tries to negotiate physical and mental health issues between her lupus and her social anxiety and how she is dealing with that. And you see, honestly, very honest depictions of her being a bit bratty. The friends she has around her who are trying to keep her in check. Like at one point, they ask her, is she going to go to her friend's birthday? And she goes, no, I need to sleep. And then
that's the clip I had seen. Yeah.
It's like, do you think I'm complaining about work? And you know, the friends who are there are calling her out. And you see her reckon with not wanting to be famous and being like, if I'm going to be famous, I have to use this for good. And really trying to channel pushing for a mental health curricula in schools. Now, for some reason, she goes out to Kenya. I wasn't really sure what that was about for a while, but it ended up being kind of important about her realizing what she could do with her platform.
Okay.
It's produced by Alec Keshessian, who did the Madonna Truth or Dare documentary, which is basically like the gold standard for these sort of documentaries. And because I saw that, I thought, oh, this is going to be like that Truth or Dare where you're going to see every side of Madonna. You don't, but like, I guess it's close to me. Like my family run a mental health charity, and you know, you hear her a lot, do a lot of work about that, and talking about mental health and talking about bipolar and having to deal with something she can't see. And I think it's very honest. And yeah, I thought she came across really well in it, even though she comes across really honestly, and you end up watching her because you see an honest depiction rather than a constant PR spin.
And it's a movie, right? It's not like a couple of episodes.
Yeah,
like it's 90
minutes thing. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I feel like I should. I've seen enough of the clips that I'm like, I'm kind of intrigued to get a little bit more framing around this. But there's just so much telly on at the moment that I'm just like,
true. It's sad though. Like it is sad. I wouldn't say it brings you joy, but it's honest.
Yeah. James, what about you? What have you been enjoying?
Well, this will bring us joy.
Okay, great.
This is a television program that I have devoured over the last maybe I devoured the first season maybe two months ago, and the second season just in the last couple of days. You can get the first season on Paramount Plus. It's a show called La Brea, a group of Los Angeles who fall through a sinkhole in the middle of Los Angeles to 10,000 BC, where they have to fight woolly mammoths and woolly rhinos, and they have to figure out how did they end up back here.
Wow.
Like bonkers, batshit, bananas, crazy, ridiculous TV show. It has all of the like CGI of like a 90s episode of Stargate. It is like, I don't know, it's like your Xena Warrior Princess fantasy. I think that like it is just one of those things you can just completely turn off your brain during. I have needed that because like when you've got lots going on, you're in and out, you've got lots of stuff. You need a TV show that is just going to like help you just kind of tune out entirely. And I definitely enjoy it. Lots of sexy people running around the place, kind of getting into scrapes.
Yeah, I'm looking at one of the pictures here on Google Images. That guy's Irish. The kind of
the longer haired fella.
Yeah,
with the scaggly beard. Yes, yeah. Gavin. Ooh,
is he Irish in the show?
No, he's not Irish in the show.
Gavin. Okay, yeah, no, I'm totally with you. Sometimes you need a show. I'm kind of like that with Grey's Anatomy. Like, I'm so tempted to go back and start from the start because I need something that I can be like, I'm just going to put this on for the next hour and a half while I'm like cleaning or doing stuff I actually do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I need some background to Ellie. Maybe this, where are you watching it?
I'm watching Paramount Plus. First season's up there, 10 episodes. You know, it's not changing any, it's not winning any awards. I'm not 100% sure it's coming back for season 3.
Is it actually subscribe to Paramount Plus?
It's good enough to use your like 7-day free trial.
Okay. I like that measurement of investment. You know, like, am I paying a monthly subscription or is this free?
Because I'm at the point now where I might be having to pay a monthly subscription for Bad Sisters. You know, I've heard a lot of stuff about it. So I think I might.
Yeah.
It's so good. It's so good. Yeah. It's so worth it. Please, okay. It's so worth it. Okay, cool. I think Paramount Plus, there's a lot coming to Paramount Plus as well next year, I think.
There is, yeah. I think it's gonna get big pretty. And a lot of your sitcom faves are on there as well. So I think
it's good enough. Right, we spoke about some celebrity splits at the start of the episode. We also gave a brief mention to Selena Gomez and The Weeknd, which is a celebrity couple that just like flashed into my mind with such clarity when you said it. We asked you guys, the listeners, about celebrity couples that you wished were still together. A lot of similar answers coming through. Any guesses to who they might be, you guys? I feel like you're going to grab
one of them. I hope there's no Brad and Angeline. Or not Brad and Jennifer.
Oh, Brad and Jen.
There's too many Brad and Jens. There's two.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah. We did get one, Jen and Justin, which I shout out to you who wanted.
I guess you were talking about Jen last week. So, like, it was in everyone's head, I suppose, when you asked.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
No, I think Jen and Justin would be a good one to see back together. They always felt like they were very happy.
We also had a lot of Ryan Gosling and Rachel McAdams.
Oh.
Which I think, look, I like him and Eva Mendes together. We just don't get a lot of their content. So like, I think it's just because at that time we just got so much of Rachel and Ryan and the jump at the MTV Movie Awards, the kiss and
Did anyone say Brian and Vogue?
Nobody said Brian Vogue. Actually, I was talking to someone about Brian and Vogue only yesterday. I was like, flashback.
I'm not saying that's mine. I was just curious.
We got quite a few Andrew Garfield and Emma Stones. Mm. We got Chloe and Lamar.
From Lamar.
Louise and Jamie Redknapp, Justin and Brittany. Taylor Lautner and Taylor Swift, which I thought was a good one. Someone said Andrew Garfield and Your One, which I presume is also Emma Stone. Penn Badgley and Blake Lively. Who else? Joshua Jackson and Diane Kruger, which I have to disagree with because I love both of their relationships.
Me too, absolutely.
Gorge. Gwyneth and Brad. I would love to see what that looks like.
That would work now.
Too, yeah.
Yeah. They said, imagine the brand. Like,
oh my God.
Come on. Pete and Kim. Heidi Klum and Seal. Jeez, we were talking about her as well. Alex and Alexa. Who's that? Why am I Alex and Alexa?
Alex and Alexa. I'm like trying to, is this a Love Island?
Alex Turner and Alexa Chung.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, that's it. Rob Kardashian and Adrian Ballon. Do you remember them when they were together?
Back in the early days.
Were they engaged?
I can't remember.
No, I can't. Olivia Wilde and Jason Sudeikis, Zac Efron and Vanessa Hudgens, and Channing Tatum and Jenna Dewan. Or Channing Tatum and Jessie J. which we always forget. Never forget.
No. Yeah. What, Lindsay Lohan and Samantha Ronson. I was here for Lindsay's lesbian era.
Yes.
That was a good one. I'm just going to Google wild celebrity couples because I'm like, there's definitely some mad pairings that we're forgetting about. Some of them are just so, you just forget they were together. Sorry, Tom Cruise and Cher.
Tom Cruise and Katie. Tom Cruise and Cher, though, actually.
Madonna and Tupac.
Was that real?
As real as most of those relationships are. whether it was a real relationship or not, they officially were boyfriend and girlfriend.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Who else is coming up on the Google search? Oh, Ryan Reynolds and Alanis Morissette. You remember them as a couple?
Oh, well, yeah.
Lads, it's just such a time warp when you look at these people together. You're like, wow, you were really together. Elon Musk and Grimes. Oh, my gosh.
I was trying to think of who would be the one that I actually would be like, oh, yeah, I'd love to see them back together. And it is, I think, Amy Poehler and Will Arnett. I think the two of them together, I really enjoyed.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. I'm trying to think, who would it be for me? Like, who was it that I was actually genuinely upset?
I'm trying to think of famous queer couples that have broken up that I want to get back together. But I can't think of that many other than Lindsay and Sam.
And Liza and David Guest. Celebrated queer couple.
Oh, David's dead. Who would I want back together? I don't want Brad and Jen back together. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want I don't want those couples back. There's definitely someone that I'm like, oh, they were so. Do you know who I did like was so random? Rachel Bilson and Bill Hader. Do you remember when they were together?
Oh yeah.
For like a New York minute, I thought they were so cute. Who else?
Hilary Duff and Joel Madden.
We won't unpack that. just Google dates of births, guys, okay?
Hilary Duff and Wilbur Valderrama.
Oh,
Wilbur is a nobody. Yeah,
no.
He should be in jail. For the same reason as before.
Creepers. Oh my God, do you remember Emily Blunt and Michael Bublé throwback?
No, I don't remember that at all.
Yeah,
no.
They were together for a long while. Long while. Okay, that's enough of me scrolling on Google Images. Guys, thank you so much for being here.
No problem.
It's always lovely.
It was
a
pleasure.
I actually feel genuinely better.
You weren't wilting at all. Good woman.
I have a fountain drink of Coke here beside me, and I was like, I can't drink this on camera because it just looks so like.
Is it like a super gulp?
Yeah, like the cup is huge. Yeah. It's like a crane that drops it in front of me. But I haven't.
You're actually wearing those straw glasses, and I can see the in both your eyes and into your mouth.
Oh, Christ. One final question before we go to bring it back to where we all started. Are you going to be watching Love Island Winter?
Yeah.
Yeah, I am.
100%. Like, because.
We're such gluttons for punishment.
It's the conversation. Whether it's good or bad, it's what people are talking about.
Yeah. It's what people are talking about. Yeah, I know. It's the FOMO, isn't it? It's not being involved in those conversations. Oh, I couldn't. It's hard for 8 weeks.
Like, I think I said this on my bottom paper last time. Like, it's the closest we get to a monoculture these days, you know, but that's something that everything's watching.
Yeah. Guys, stay strong through this hectic RuPaul period. James, I'm excited to see what
Pastures new.
Yeah, what that looks like for after
who
January.
Knows? I'll still be very open to speaking about Love Island. Don't worry.
Oh, great.
I'll be
okay,
heading off to be more serious in my life about the old gays. But don't worry, I'm not leaving reality TV behind for too long.
Look, we all need our escapism, you know. James and Kian from Sissy That Pod. You can find it everywhere you get your podcasts. It's there. Thank you so much for being here. Oh, we always have such a laugh on My Bottom Paper, and I'd like to think we'll do the same on this podcast going forward. Have a great week. I wish good things to you for the week ahead and to you guys listening. We are getting so close to Christmas, guys. I know it's probably everyone's really busy at work now, like starting.
Can I ask, have you got everything bought like you said you were last week?
No. Nope, not a fucking thing.
Just
not a fucking thing. Now, what I did do is kind of push. What I did do is sign up for the Secret Santa website that my sister generated for us. That's literally all I have done. Okay. So thanks for that shout out. I'm heading into a Sunday evening now feeling like I've failed with the one task I set myself for last week. Perfect. Let's start as we mean to go on. Keenan and James, thank you so much. Have a great week. We'll be back next week with loads more celebrity news. We'll talk to you then.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you so much to my guests, Keen and James of Sissy That Pod, for joining me this week on the podcast. And thank you to you guys for tuning in each and every week. You can find us over on Instagram and TikTok at don'tquoteme.podcast. And you can also find us on all of your favorite podcast apps, so you can listen whenever and wherever you like. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode and all of the latest goss. We'll talk to you then.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.